This is the Chris Smith Show on today's News Talk, TNT Radio.
G'day, g'day. Welcome to the program. Good to have your company, no matter where you're watching or listening from across the globe right now. You are treated as VIP listeners and viewers, and also, of course, those who get on to the talkback lines. I hope you're well. This is the Australian edition of TNT Radio .live, and there is a lot on. Let me tell you, I've got another opportunity for you to vote today to gauge your views on Federal Labor's budget of 2024 last night, delivered by Jim Chalmers. To lodge your vote on today's question, you need to have downloaded the app. Now, that is For My Say. That's the app, For the numeral, M-Y-S-A-Y. Just download the For My Say app from the Apple Store or Google Play, depending on what system you've got on your device. Today's question is, has the federal government demonstrated responsibility in the measures outlined within the budget? Has the federal government demonstrated responsibility in the measures outlined within the budget? You have three options, a yes, a no, or something in between. It's unsure. You've got 90 minutes from now to lodge your vote. We'll close the booth, the polling booth, at 4:30 p.m. Australian Eastern Standard Time, and I'll have the results for you before the end of the program. That is before 5 o'clock, and we'll be able to gauge what your reaction has been to the budget. You can go to For My Say right away. For the numeral, M-Y-S-A-Y, and voting has begun. I want to talk about the worldwide policy aimed at taking knives off our streets. Today in Sydney and also London, politicians are talking about an invasive police power that they say will work. But is there really a knife epidemic in the first place? It is interesting to look at the statistics. You may be surprised. My guests today include communications guru Prue McSween, who'll be having her say on Labor's unavoidable spending. That term that came up yesterday, hard to fathom. At a time when inflation could seriously spike in Australia, why would you have spending that is unavoidable? Nothing when it comes to spending is unavoidable. Politically, it's unavoidable because Labor is coming from a far way back to try and regain lost ground as we gear up towards an election in the early part of 2025. There's also an unprecedented legal action going on that we've discovered today by a group of Australian police officers who are suing a former chief prosecutor, Shane Drumgold. Yes, it's related to the Brittany Higgins, Bruce Lehman case. And, of course, the US president's trade war with China. He's cranking that up this week, but is it necessary? Really? And I would have thought it's as much of an election stunt as any that I've heard from the president, but we'll talk about that with Prue McSween shortly. We spend most of our time on this program yesterday on the whopping 5 years and 8 months sentence handed down by the ACT Supreme Court judge to defence lawyer David McBride, the former defence lawyer. I doubt that after this case, we will be hearing too much from noble whistleblowers in Australia. It could take decades before a serious, significant whistleblower comes forward to reveal corruption. And if the new National Corruption Authority thinks that all of a sudden all the whistleblowers attached to public service or any of the agencies are going to come out of the woodwork and give them the information to break a case, they've got another thing coming. Because the Supreme Court and the ACT has ensured that there'll be none of that. None of that at all. But it got me thinking about what motivates whistleblowers. Is it because they're confident that what they're doing is so noble they could not possibly be convicted of anything? There might be a bit of that. Is it because that they are so angry and upset about injustice? Could be that. I want to talk about whistleblowers and what they're motivated by with psychiatrist Dr. Tanveer Ahmed on the program today. We'll also talk about the resources announced in the federal budget for mental health, because that is a crisis which requires a lot more effort from government than what they're giving it. And it is Cyber Wednesday, which means that Alex will be along to discuss the biggest issues in global technology today. And if you've got any tech questions for Alex, by all means, you can call and ask away. As a matter of fact, we're playing some clips today that will give you an idea of how advanced ChatGPT is, especially the latest edition. He's got all of that for you in his segment a little bit later. And those talkback numbers, you couldn't have forgotten, could you? Hopefully you've written them down or you put them on the fridge or you've, you know, typed them into your device, because you never know when you really want to jump on this particular vehicle and have your say. You can call in from the United States or Canada on 1-888-201-6425. From the UK, 033-0024-1026. Or from Australia and New Zealand, 1-800-670-310. They are your numbers, and you're with Chris Smith. We're broadcasting live on the Global News Talk Network, TNT Radio.
Russia, gas prices, COVID mandates.
It just doesn't seem like anybody's doing anything about it.
Today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
You know, it's not often that I get splinters sitting on the fence on issues, especially related to freedom or any additional powers given to our police. I rarely do, but I have on the issue of knife searches. And today is a major day for this topic in both Sydney and London. Today in the lower house of the New South Wales Parliament, Premier Chris Minns will table his proposed new search laws to give police the power to conduct random wanding for knives in designated areas. Now, the bill will give police the power to use metal detection wands, WANDs, in areas where a knife crime has been committed within the past 12 months. Yes, 12 months. Now, the plan originally was to have a rule that said, well, if there was a knife crime in that area in the past 6 months, they could search anyone they like. That's been changed in the past 24 hours, so it's been stiffened up. They've beefed it up to 12 in the past 24 hours. So if there's been a knifing, say, well, select any area, say Town Hall Square in Parramatta, right? Say 11 months ago, there was an attempted knife crime there, and you're walking through from the station, heading off to Parramatta Stadium to see your football, you can be stopped and wandered looking for your knives. Do you carry knives? No. Okay. Well, you're going to be wandered anyway. Are you a suspect for anything? No, doesn't matter. You'll be wandered anyway. It's a pretty invasive process, but maybe it is the only way to get the massive number of knives off our streets. So that's why I've got splinters here. I don't like police just selecting whoever they feel like in their gut they would like to wand. Now, you can construe what I'm referring to there in terms of wayward young police officers who would like to wand young girls. That's just one way in which this can be abused. But let's look at the stats before we go any further. Not the headlines. We know about the headlines. We know about Bondi Junction. We know about Wakeley. We know about Derek at the school last week. We know all about that. Let's look at the stats. According to Lydia Shelley, who's the president of the Council for Civil Liberties, the government is targeting the wrong crisis.
Well, in New South Wales, statistics show that in terms of the use of knives in violent offences, that's actually decreased. We don't have a knife crisis in New South Wales. We have a mental health crisis. And I don't mean that in any way to take away from the tragedy and the grief that has been left, particularly in relation to Bondi. But effectively, we can't just be introducing laws. Laws are a blunt instrument. They're reactive. And it wouldn't have solved or stopped any of the violence that we've seen in recent weeks.
What do you think of that? It's not a bad argument. If you don't have increasing numbers of knife incidents, why are you going that hard to take away knives? And is it a mental health crisis? Bondi Junction certainly was. But this new wanding law is already in place in Queensland, and police are adamant there that what they call Jack's Law has actually saved lives. So they've put it in practice. They say it saves lives. Meanwhile, in London, the government is on the same trajectory. with police being urged to increase their use of stop and search strategies to tackle Britain's knife crime. Some commentators are saying there's no such thing as stop and search. Police don't do it anymore. In fact, Tories are accusing police of appeasing certain aggressive groups in the community. That'd be about right, wouldn't it? Which they rightly argue is discriminatory. Of course it is. Some people are getting off because you can't sort of look for their knives. You could imagine what kind of reaction you'll get. So let's not do that. Anti-knife campaigners like doorman Matt Ajahi says not only are police soft in London, but so too are penalties for knife crime.
Honestly speaking, I feel like the police are way too soft. Black people are very intelligent. And when I say that, I mean, we know where we can get away with these crimes and where we can't get away with these crimes. I'm someone who lived in Nigeria for many years. And I went to school with many Nigerian Brits, Nigerian Americans, Nigerian Italians, Nigerian Germans. And when we got there, the discipline was so strict that we never thought about this kind of behavior. It's something that doesn't happen back there. But when we come here, we understand the law. We understand there's a discounted sentence. You'll probably just serve half. And, you know, the worst thing is when you come out of jail, you know, you're looked at as a hero in the community. You know, you've earned your stripes. So how does that even work? So we need strong sentences. I'm a strong advocate for strong sentences. None of this woke stuff. We're fed up with woke. Kids are dying. We haven't got time for woke. We need to stamp our foot down and we need to really start cracking down on these guys tough. I want really harsh punishment, like really harsh.
It's not about argument. You go to Singapore, you go to Malaysia, you get caught carrying a knife, you go to jail. That is the minimum mandatory sentence. You go to jail, which is why they don't have knife crime in Malaysia or Singapore. In Britain, there are actually causational statistics which show that as soon as former PM Theresa May curbed the search powers of police, this is a decade ago, knife crime skyrocketed almost instantly. It's risen nationally by almost 10% to nearly 50,000 offences. And sure enough, what's being touted as the answer in London this week? Well, yesterday, the Home Secretary, James Cleverly, announced that knife detection wands, WANDs, to check for knives were being developed right now as part of a $4 million knife crime strategy. So the random wand is very much in vogue, not just in New South Wales or Queensland, but in the UK as well. Help me get off the fence here. Is it an invasion of privacy we should push back against? Or should we do all we can to stop deadly knife crime on our streets, even if we do have to sacrifice some of our civil liberties? Now, it's not guesswork here. We've got it working in Queensland, and those who watch these things are saying it saves lives. My gut does tell me it may be one civil liberty worth sacrificing. This is TNT Radio.
TNT's Rick Munn.
Then he goes on to quote somebody called Thomas Davis. He said, "It's not blood that makes you Irish, but willingness to be part of the Irish nation." Absolute bollocks. It's your blood that makes you Irish. Then you can choose to turn your back on Ireland and be not Irish and be a traitor to Irish, as the Irish government are doing. It's not your willingness to be Irish that makes you Irish. He says, "Say no to racism, bigotry and hatred by voting number one for Shayak Omar Al-Qadri on the 7th of June in the European elections." Omar Al-Qadri, I won't be voting in the Irish elections. I can't. And even if I could, I would not be voting for you, you little weasel.
Locked and Loaded with Rick Munn on today's News Talk, TNT.
TNT is an independent global news talk station that does what others only say they do. TNT is a live radio and TV broadcaster that simply tells the truth 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. No one in the world does what we do, crisscrossing the globe, providing credible news and opinion all day and all night. In 2.5 years, TNT has become a credible and exciting platform with brilliant hosts and staff. It's a critical time, and we must continue to call out the misinformation and propaganda from mainstream media and their powerful sponsors. We're now appealing to our many friends and supporters around the world to go to tntradio.live and make a small donation to TNT while we seek the right investors to continue our important mission.
From weather and traffic reports, to news of political developments.
We turn to journalists for the information we need to live our daily lives.
Journalists around the world provide news that is essential for democracy,
for personal freedom, and for safety and stability.
Yet their ability to report freely and safely is under attack like never before.
Too many journalists are paying with their lives.
They face exponential risks, and they've already paid a heavy toll.
Death threats, online harassment, and physical attacks
are becoming a daily experience of journalists in all countries.
We just want people to be safe, to be able to get our readers the information that they need to make informed decisions.
They checked my phone and realized that it was Pegasus. I feel myself like I'm naked at the street.
These charges were politicized from the start.
Facts win. Truth wins. Justice wins.
C'est énorme pour moi d'être là, d'être libre, surtout que je m'y attendais pas du tout.
Stand with a free press.
Stand with journalists whose reporting won't be silenced. Press freedom is your freedom.
I was such a young age. Everything changed. My name is Chloe. When I was 13, my dad was diagnosed with cancer. When I found out, I just didn't know how to react. I felt like everything was just kind of closing in on me. It just became a routine. Dad's doing chemo. I'd come home from school, wait for mum to finish work, and we'd go straight to the hospital, spend a few hours there, just draw. It was hard to navigate going to school. Hundreds of kids, and I was the only one with a dying dad. He was diagnosed in March, and then he died in October. Towards the end, I heard about Canteen. It kind of felt nice to know that they had other people like me. They understood what I was going through, and we didn't even have to chat about cancer. In 2020, I became a youth ambassador, so I can help others the way they helped me. I've done so many things since I was 13. I've graduated high school, university, gotten my license, made a move across the country. Life now is just a whole lot more fun. Please give a gift today to support more young people like me experiencing cancer.
Right now, the forgotten poor are waiting for healing and care, for life-saving medical care, for a chance to live with dignity and hope. They are waiting for Mercy Ships and you. Mercy Ships is the largest floating civilian hospital in the world, with volunteer medical staff and crew who donate their time to save lives. And now, as our newest state-of-the-art hospital ship sets sail, Mercy Ships will double our ability to reach children and adults who need us now.
Without the work of Mercy Ships, these patients don't have another option.
Mercy Ships is answering the call to serve suffering people who have nowhere else to turn. Together, we are going to some of the world's most desperate places and bringing a wave of hope and healing to those who need it most.
Thank you!
Thank you!
To learn more about this wave of hope, go to mercyships.org today.
My baby's back from the West Coast.
Hear those pictures that you asked for your school project? First day of school, cute as a button.
So long ago.
Oh, here's Grandma Florence after that flood wiped out the whole neighborhood.
Sometimes I just cannot believe all the storms we've gone through here.
I can only hope that we'll be able to leave this house to you one day, baby. You're our legacy.
Planning for these disasters will make sure we're safe, and is the best way to protect that legacy.
Those beans smell heavenly.
Mm-hmm. Give Mom a little credit.
You know what? We should make an emergency communication plan. That way we're ready this year.
Oh, great
idea.
At my dorm, we have emergency kits for earthquakes and wildfires, but I'm sure there's something more local. I can send you with the link.
Okay.
Smart.
I'm coming to share with you guys.
Protect your legacy. Plan for natural disasters today. Visit ready.gov/plan.
So many people who had no history of heart illnesses have got it now, or blood clotting after the COVID-19 vaccination. Punish those who hurt people with COVID madness, lighting the fuse for freedom. TNT Radio.
Okay, now our For My Say poll is underway, and you're voting at a great rate of knots right now. We appreciate it. If you do not have this app, very easy to do. It'll take you about 45 seconds. For My Say, numeral 4, MYSAY. Go to your app store where you get your apps. Get this on. You'll see the question, has the federal government demonstrated responsibility in the measures outlined within the budget? So basically, it's a litmus test to work out whether you, as listeners and viewers of TNT, approve of the budget or think there's too much spending associated with it. You get a yes, no, or unsure option, and you can vote away. It's open right now, open for just over an hour from now, and then we'll close it at about 4:30 Australian Eastern Standard Time, and I'll give you the results of all of that before we get off at 5. Now, I do want to go to Peter McCulloch, who's a professor and, of course, part of the McCulloch Foundation, who has come across a brand new study on COVID vaccinations. And he wrote on X today, breaking, new study finds the ready-to-use mRNA vaccine Pfizer, right? So he's actually referring to mRNA Pfizer. He's using the a word that I won't confuse you with, but it's a word related to the Pfizer jab only. It contains DNA impurities that exceed the permitted limit value by several hundred times, and in some cases even more than 500 times. The applied qPCR by governments is designed so that a massive under-detection of DNA impurities appears to be the result. I'll give you some more details on that later in the program, but it's a brand new study. Peter McCulloch is right across it, and it reveals once again that at least the Pfizer mRNA vaccine has impurities beyond the limit required. All right, let's get to the founder and director of Verve Communications, Prue McSween. As I say, there's a lot on today, and we want to get to as much of it as we possibly can. Prue, welcome to the program.
Thanks, Smithy.
I just want to ask you very quickly, just very quick comment on David McBride's sentence yesterday. And I know you have commented on what he had to do, what he did, what he pleaded guilty to. You've commented on all of this on a previous occasion, so we understand where you stand. You're worried about the kinds of information that he allowed to be made public. I get it. But given the fact that this bloke, who made no benefit out of this professionally, promotionally, financially, gets 5 years and 8 months. He's suffering from a mental illness as well. He's been 5 years in limbo. On top of that, he pleaded guilty, and he still gets 5 years and 8 months. Your response to that kind of sentence?
Well, when you look at the sentences that, you know, for manslaughter or murder even, or rapes, they don't go much further than that. So I think it is probably excessive. And the thing that I'm worried about, which is what you were saying earlier in your editorial, is that whistleblowers will just clam up. Why would anyone come forward? Look, I do, as you know, have concerns about secrets that could jeopardise the safety of our ADF elsewhere, and the fact that, in theatres of war, we don't know how we're going to react. And it's fine for armchair critics to sit back and say they shouldn't have done what they've done. So, you know, I have concerns about that. But in this case, I believe that it was probably excessive.
Yeah. I heard a comment from one of our contributors on a show that came after mine yesterday that said that he was the hanging judge. Now, I don't know whether that's true. I hadn't heard that. But it is the ACT jurisdiction, so I haven't been privy to other decisions handed down. But it really is one of those sentences that would be applicable to someone who had a nickname of the hanging judge. Let's talk about the budget, just very briefly. I don't want to get confused in numbers and figures, because most people just glaze over when they hear about what the federal budget contains. But an across-the-board rebate of $300 per person for power. Firstly, Do you notice that they steered clear of making it 275 just in case it reminded everyone of the 275 lie that we didn't get during the election campaign? And secondly, this should have been means tested, shouldn't it? Because there are some very well-to-do people. Malcolm Turnbull's going to get the $300, as will the I think it's 3 million people in poverty in Australia.
Well, the billionaires will be able to order their $500 steaks with no repercussions at all, will they? Look, isn't it absurd and obscene and lazy politics?
Lazy.
We have, you know, women in cars who can't even afford electricity. They ain't going to get the $300. You know, and we've got this ridiculous situation where it's so indiscriminate. It's ridiculous when we always know that this government, the whole reason we're in this pickle, that we have these excessive energy price hikes is because of the decisions of this government, the obsession. We should have the cheapest energy prices in the world. And in fact, we're one of the highest, if not the highest. And we also know that we're heading for a comeuppance. There's panic stations from that buffoon Bowen and the rest of them that they now realise they need gas for a baseload. And of course, no one wants to invest in gas anymore. Why would you risk it with a government like this? You know, it is so absurd. And I love the reviews of the budget because people understand how politically motivated this budget has been, how inflationary it is going to be. You know, Chalmers believes that, you know, his handouts, this spend-a-thon, are going to lower inflation. Well, I think he's wrong. And the chickens are going to come home to roost. And you just have to ask any struggling family how they feel about the budget. You know, there's subsidies for all sorts of people, but in the end, we're all suffering so much. And I just feel like the headlines on the paper, The Australian, now put it on Afterpay, or bung it on Afterpay.
Yes, good headlines.
You've got all these wonderful headlines that even people like Phil Khoury, who's from the AFR, who's a real rabid lefty, he said, Australia is in structural decline and the government isn't coming to save us.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, and this is the thing, they only want to save themselves. And let's hope that people don't fall for it.
Yeah, it's a pre-election budget. It looks that way. I know it's a long way out from the election, but they know that they've got to make up a lot of ground, which is why they're doing it now. I've got to take a break for news. We'll do that. We'll go there on TNT.
We do have some big news.
Listen up.
Now, TNT Radio News.
Matt Boylan here with a look at your TNT headlines. There are calls for new laws to be introduced in Australia to protect whistleblowers after a former military lawyer and one of our own contributors here at TNT was thrown in jail for exposing Australian war crimes. US Secretary of State Antony Blinken's been slammed online after he was spotted partying in a basement bar in Ukraine. And nearly 500,000 Palestinians are said to have fled Rafah as Israeli forces reportedly close in on the densely populated city.
Why not give TNT Radio a follow? We're on all major social platforms, including Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, Gab, and Getter. Help us get the word out as we cover the biggest topics of our time right here on today's News Talk.
TNT Radio.
TNT Radio.
Back to Prue McSween now, and this is just broken, when I say just, about 2 hours ago. Five Australian federal police officers are suing the ACT government for almost $1.5 million over allegations by former Chief Prosecutor Shane Drumgold that they acted disgracefully in seeking to pressure him not to prosecute the alleged rape of Brittany Higgins. It's the government and Drumgold who are being sued, by the way, so Drumgold personally. And the applicants say their lives and their careers have been destroyed as a result of what Drumgold said. They knew, the police knew, having all the evidence in front of them, proved that this lacked the evidence to achieve a conviction. Drumgold should have listened to them instead of downing them and downing their reputation in court.
Well, he was intent on getting a solution that he wanted. And it was so blatantly obvious, wasn't it? And to think that these AFP guys who really were on the button when it came to what they were saying have been defamed. Let's face it, they have been. Their whole identity and operationally as police, they know that, you know, to be smeared in this way where they had an agenda, you know, that's their integrity was totally compromised and questioned. So I hope they go like crazy for the ACT government and for Drumgold. And, of course, that was what started the Sofronov of inquiry, and they were exonerated there.
Yeah.
So good on them. And I just hope Drumgold's really sweating like crazy because he deserves to be.
Yep.
He rolled the dice and he's failed big time.
Very true. All right, let's talk about anti-Semitism on campuses. I was speaking with Mark Latham on the program yesterday about how weak as water the deans are in tackling blatant anti-Semitism. I don't care what's happening in the rest of the world. But today, Prue, at least one university has decided to get out from under their desks and push back against these pro-Palestinian encampments. Bear in mind, these are just not pro-Palestinian encampments. They are pro-Palestinian encampments that yellow, that bellow and write anti-Semitism on posters and vocally. If you abuse the right to protest, your right to protest comes into question, surely.
Well, Janet Albrechtson today in The Australian was really good and succinct about it. She said it's very important that there's a distinction between our laws of free speech and morality in a civilized society. And the fact that they have been calling for intifada, that they have, you know, the river from the rivers to the seas, a familiar chant, you know, we know what that means. And the intimidation and the hostility towards Jews on the campus has just got to stop. And we've had such weak leadership, or you couldn't call it leadership, from the vice chancellors. Now it's the ANU as well as Deakin that have woken up to themselves. But we have these empowered little smart ass university students who, of course, would probably be flung off the buildings if they were over in by Hamas, if they were over in Gaza.
Spot on. They wouldn't last 5 seconds.
You know, and the thing is that they're, you know, standing up and defying, saying, we're not going to leave, we have our rights. What about the rights of the Jewish students and the other students who just want to go to university and learn? And I think that it's come from Albanese right through to the messaging right across the board has been so wrong, where they have empowered these pro-Palestinian protests to the point where Jews are too scared to walk out with their yarmulkes on, with any jewellery on that identifies them, our school uniforms. This is Australia, for God's sake, and we are condoning this and allowing this to happen. We don't want these imported problems here.
No.
And sadly, we're seeing it daily on these campuses. And you know, to be honest, I'd expel a lot of them. Don't let them pursue their university degree.
Yep.
They've forfeited the right, as far as I'm concerned.
They've crossed the line. Now, let's move abroad. US President Joe Biden is trying to deflect his own inabilities, as far as I'm concerned, declaring a tariff war with China. What's your take on this?
Well, look, I heard what you said, but look, we all know the man's totally inept and shouldn't be in the job, but China only, they use it as a weapon, tariffs, as we know and as we have experienced. And so I quite like the fact that America is giving them some of their own medicine. I had to laugh because one of their foreign ministers was saying how they were going to retaliate, and US was trampling on the principles of market economy and, economic international trade rules. You know, what the hell have you been doing with Australia, for God's sake?
He said they've been doing it for 40 years.
And as Trump said, China is eating our lunch. And frankly, it's about time that, you know, they got some of their medicine. And, you know, China's going through an economic challenge at the moment. So I quite like the idea that they're sticking it up them. So it's about the only thing I do support Biden in.
Well, we're 5 months and 2 weeks away from the election. They're going to try and outdo themselves over how much they can hate China. You can just tell. You can just tell. Now, I want to talk about Muslim politics at the moment. And I guess it falls into line with the amount of anti-Semitism we've seen around the world and the fact that Israel has done themselves no favours in the numbers of innocents that have been killed in this war against Hamas. But how influential at the moment is the Muslim vote influencing politics around the world, do you think, Prue? Whether it's, you know, across the suburbs of Australia and therefore influencing what our politicians in government are saying about the war, or the boroughs of England, politicians are super careful about what side they pick in this war over Gaza. It is having an impact, isn't it?
It is, and it's quite scary because they're voting in blocks. They've got incredible muscle, and we are seeing it here. It's influencing the decisions of our government, as we know, with Tony Burke, Jason Clare. There's a few of them that are more worried about their own backsides than whether it's actually good for the Australian community. And in UK, we've had a terrible, example of it where they're chanting from the river to the sea for local council elections. For God's sake, focus on your potholes and your garbage, not that kind of garbage. But they're really, you know, it's becoming a religion for them in terms of anything that's anti-Western. And it's quite terrifying because, as we know, they are coming to so many countries now, either through our programs, our very active programs here, that Penny Wong's very keen to bring many more Palestinians from Gaza here, as we know. And they're going into their enclaves. And, you know, most Australians are very tolerant, and I absolutely applaud multiculturalism. But I do not applaud the fact that we're seeing time and again in mosques around this country and mosques everywhere where there is terrible indoctrination of our youth. And we are finding that the hate speech that is going on there is very anti the West, and it's very dangerous. And we're all scared of the influence that the Muslims are having on this country and around the world. And, you know, that's not fair to the law-abiding Muslims, but there is a real fear and anxiety out there. And it's something that I don't know how we're going to abate it. How are we going to control it?
Well, the politicians are in lockstep with what their pro-Palestinian voters think at the moment. They're not going to put a foot outside where they think they'll lose. But interesting to see that vote in the UN on Friday. Australia does something that you wouldn't normally see Australia do, which is vote opposite to what the United States has voted, and voted for a Palestinian observer member position in the United States. It's quite, you can't underestimate the gravity of what we're doing internationally on this issue against the wishes of the United States.
Now, she has totally betrayed us, Penny Wong.
Oh, yeah.
And, I have never been more livid than ever over that weekend when I heard that. I think, how dare she? She has no mandate to do what she did. She was sneaky, and I just feel, you know, she wouldn't answer the questions. Where is her policy mandate to do this? Has she asked the Australian people? I would say that it's going to backfire big time, and it's all part of the narrative of how inept this government is. And duplicitous, you cannot trust this government in any way. And Wong was wrong, and I hope she pays for it big time.
Now, this footage from France today, wow, talk about brazen, this deadly ambush of prison guards in an effort to release a major gang leader from jail. It is breathtaking. We've got some pictures now. And I wonder what it means for the upcoming Olympic Games in Paris, Prue. Can they handle acts of terror? Can they handle, you know, heists, ambushes? Because the event will be a huge, the Olympic Games, I mean, will be a huge target.
Well, it is. And we saw that in 1972 with the Munich massacre of the Jews. And how terrifying was that? And it was so badly handled, as we know, where, you know, all the hostages in the end were killed. And it is concerning because while Paris say that they've got 40,000 police or security personnel and 70,000 troops that are going to be protecting the Olympians and the guests, but you just can't help. Just takes one, just one moron, one sick person with intent. And sadly, given what's going on in Gaza, I just can't help feeling that they're looking for huge public theatres where they can actually make their statements, the murderous statements. And that's what's worrying me, that, to be frank, I'm very anxious about what's going to go on there and whether anyone could be prepared, let alone France.
Yeah, true. Although I've got to say, after 9/11, I remember going to Paris and, like, there were submachine guns in the hands of soldiers throughout the arrivals terminal. They have a history of not mucking around when it comes to security. So I guess if any country had their hands on the Olympic Games, this is probably a country we could rely on, but we'll soon see. Okay, I've left the worst to last. And I've avoided touching this all week, but I could have done it on Monday and I didn't. And then I could have done it yesterday, but we were taken over by so many other things, especially David McBride's sentence. But I have been gobsmacked, Prue, by the fake royal tour, and it's not a royal tour, but it's been made to look like a royal tour, undertaken by Harry and Meghan in Nigeria. No royal support, understandably so, but they still bill the Nigerians. This is a third world country that's paying for these two galoots to walk through the main cities like they're some kind of members of the royal family, all in the name of their mental health charity. People in Nigeria are just trying to survive. Their mental health is very much down the priority list. And she is having a lend of the world. She's obviously instigating all of this. She's making Harry's reputation just look awful.
Well, she is, although now, of course, I loved, there was a quote in one of the papers that she came as a duchess to Nigeria and left as a princess because somehow she's traced her genealogy and she's some royalty down there. I mean, give me a break, isn't
Bullshit.
It? But Smithy, of course, you've got to feel sorry for them because they had a bounce check or they had a check that was in the mail for their charity. Archwell was actually called delinquent because it hadn't paid what were the statutory requirements for a charity. So the check was in the mail. It was all a mix-up. And maybe they Nigerians, with their, coins going around to help them pay the checks and the check. It's so pathetic, isn't it?
But it is.
We can expect to see them go there often because the adulation, must have really made them feel so good.
Yes, exactly. I'm sure they felt good, if that's important. Thank you so much, Prue. Enjoy
Thanks,
the rest
Smithy.
Of your
Have
week.
Have a good week. You
good
too.
On you. Same to you. Prue McSween, founder and director of Verve Communications. Good to get through some of the biggest stories in Australia today through her eyes. We'll take a break. I want to play you something really intriguing and inspirational from Alex Antic, the senator, the Liberal senator from South Australia, who's decided to let the House know what he thinks of any kind of meddling with transparency. He is against censorship, and wait till you hear what he had to say about it right here on TNT.
It's been said that when someone you love has Parkinson's, you have Parkinson's. The truth is, Parkinson's disease doesn't just affect the diagnosed. It affects everyone who supports and helps care for them. Worldwide, over 10 million people are living with Parkinson's, a neurological disease that affects movement. And with so many places to search for information, it can be difficult to know where to begin. The Parkinson's Foundation has answers. Answers for everyone in the fight. We can help you understand the disease, help you find expert care, give you tips for living a better life, share the latest research, help you find local support, and there's a free helpline you can call. Find your answers and join us in the fight against Parkinson's. To learn more, please go to parkinson.org or call 1-800-4PD-INFO. The Parkinson's Foundation. Better lives together.
The thing that drives me every day as a dad is him. Every day he's hungry for something. And there's this huge responsibility in making sure that he's a good person. I think the advice I would give is you don't need to know all the answers. It's okay to make mistakes. As long as it's coming from love, then it kind of starts to work itself out.
This is The Chris Smith Show on today's News Talk, TNT Radio.
Just quickly on energy, on the chat box on TNTradio.live, Pelly writes, "We are the dumbest country on earth." talking about Australia, of course, have so much energy resources, which we have no issue exporting to the rest of the world to use, but they are not good enough to use ourselves. How this circus of a government was elected astounds me. Good on you, Pelly. Thank you. Well, on Monday, we had a real victory for freedom of speech, and I guess freedom of press too, when the Federal Court of Australia lifted an injunction on Elon Musk's X platform, which prevented, well, actually ordered him to censor the video of Bishop Emmanuel being stabbed at his Wakeley Church in Sydney Southwest earlier this year. There will be a trial of this application, by the way, but thankfully the horse has bolted. And I doubt whether the eSafety Commissioner would even bother pursuing it any further, although she does have delusions of world dominance, so you never know. But there are some rare political diamonds in the federal parliament who will stand up at the moment against censorship. Many don't. The majority don't, which is a disgrace. And the upcoming misinformation and disinformation bill is very much in their line of sight. Politicians like Liberal Senator Alex Antic, who this week delivered an impassioned plea to stop the censorship and always err on the side of transparency. Wouldn't it be great if mainstream media did the same? This was the kind of important mantra that Australia's mainstream media used to stand for. But of course, now they take their orders from legal advisers who have become morality police within these organisations rather than adjudicators of what's legal or not. And I know that from firsthand experience, but I digress. Here's Alex Antic and a superb address linking the current mad push for censorship with the government and the legacy media.
Have you ever wondered why the government is so adamant about shielding you from online content, or why the media is always in total lockstep? Now, I've no doubt it's quite comforting to believe the government knows what's best for you and that they've got your back, but if you're anything like me, alarm bells go off when you hear that the government is safeguarding your interests, especially when it comes to censorship. Whether you call it the mass media, the legacy media, the mainstream media, the free press, journalists of the past bravely exposed scandals without fear or favour, and some still do today, but they're often met with backlash and ridicule and diatribe. The media once hailed itself as the fourth estate, a crucial check against government overreach and corruption, and an indispensable pair for the pillar of democracy. Journalism was an honourable pursuit driven by ethics and a commitment to the truth. However, control over traditional media outlets soon became consolidated into a few hands, and over the past three decades or so, journalism has drastically declined. Journalists today are pressured by their employers to craft narratives rather than report facts, with those narratives commonly aligning with corporate and government interests. In the 1990s, the internet promised to fix it with decentralised control and genuine freedom of expression. In those days, the internet was merely a strange meeting place for gamers and Star Trek fans, but eventually it transformed our media consumption habits, with social media platforms emerging as influential players in news, information and entertainment. What should have developed into a space for a diverse and free dialogue has degenerated into a weapon of mass deletion. Twitter, now X, was perfectly acceptable to the establishment when it was populated for and curated by aggrieved academics giving each other virtual back rubs over the horrors of cheap coal-fired power and colonialism. But as soon as Elon Musk turned it into a mainstream free speech platform, the discourse returned, the bots were eliminated, and the warning sirens went off. If only we could have had Elon Musk's Twitter during COVID, a period in which the media was the greatest purveyor of misinformation and disinformation on the planet. Instead, we had the mainstream media and social media quarterbacking the establishment's narrative and removing opinions that contradicted them. The Twitter file scandal in the US exposed the cozy relationship between these platforms and government agencies, echoing past instances of media manipulation. And the domestic Home Affairs censorship saga I exposed last year did a similar thing right here in Australia. And if you think this sounds too far-fetched, remember that in the 1960s, the CIA ran Operation Mockingbird, a clandestine venture designed to influence journalists and media organisations in order to affect public opinion and control the news cycles. Many social media platforms to this day hire former intelligence employees, most of whom work in trust and safety teams, determining what content gets amplified, fact-checked, and what gets taken down entirely. Big tech is the perfect intersection between government, the ruling class and the intelligence services along with their mates in big business. You see what they want you to see. Australia is at the tip of the spear of the global censorship movement, and I suspect that many who are involved are blissfully unaware and think that they're doing the right thing by shutting down and deleting so-called mis- and disinformation. But let's be clear, the government isn't thinking about your safety and it doesn't care about misinformation. What it cares about is making sure that you see an approved message at all times.
How good is that? So good, I could play it again after the news and then again maybe at 4:30. Like, that good. He has nailed it. He's put the Fourth Estate into their place for the way that they run narratives and not report on truth and news. Did he what? And he talks about the fact that Twitter has now turned on the left and their bots, who were aghast for so many years that we would talk positively about coal-fired power, which couldn't be the truth. Like, Alex Antic, you are a legend. Outstanding. And as I say, I feel like playing it again and again. Don't forget, we've got the For My Say question on the budget that you can vote on. Has the federal government demonstrated responsibility in the measures outlined within the budget? You can go to For My Say. That's numeral 4, M-Y-S-A-Y. That's an app. You got to download the app. Just do that. It takes 45 seconds. Very simple. And you'll see that question, and then you can choose yes, no, or unsure. We'll close it in around about 35 minutes from now. I want to go to our talkback line. Siv, go right ahead.
G'day, Chris. How are you going, mate?
Good, thank you, mate.
That's good to hear. Yeah, just briefly, I guess this dovetails into some of what Senator Antic was talking about. And that's this thing of censorship, well, according to some at least. We have a council in Sydney, Cumberland Council, that had a ban on a book about same-sex parenting. I think they're talking about overturning that ban. I think the mayor wants to overturn it, apparently. Now,
I read that on today.
Now, on the one hand, I understand why some might want to call for that book to be censored, because, well, we don't want children getting exposed to that, and anything that we can prevent our children from being exposed to that's immoral or incorrect or whatever it is, fair enough. On the other hand, though, if you censor it and push it underground, that stuff will still be accessed, and so wouldn't it be better to see what's out there and go, well, I'm not letting my children read that, and leave the censoring up to the parents?
I agree completely. Bear in mind there could be 4 or 5 kids in a particular classroom in that area that have same-sex parents. Why not?
That's right.
Why wouldn't you read about how it operates and how they run their household?
Well, that's right, and that book might not be for you and me, but it might be for them. So I think I'm on the more libertarian side, and I'm on the side that says, look, I don't think it's a good idea to censor it. If the parents want to censor it, if they don't think it's the right thing for their family and their children, fair enough. But I don't think it should be up to the council to be doing that. If the council should be picking up the rubbish, cleaning the roads and doing the things that council should be doing, not getting involved in social causes. Oh, wait, that's an old-fashioned notion. We should be talking about Palestine instead. Good to talk to you, Chris.
Good on you. Thank you for that, Siv. Tongue firmly placed in cheek, but he's right. How good was that reference by Alex Antic, weapons of mass deletion, which is basically what Julie Inman Grant, the now e-safety commissioner, did when she was working on Twitter, the old left-leaning Twitter. She would hate Twitter now, so much so that she's gone for them in court. But although the same video is on YouTube, we don't touch YouTube. If this is not an individual personal campaign, I'm not here. While we're talking censorship, you know that there was a rally 2 weeks ago featuring a group of people that wanted no more censorship, certainly no censorship of social media, but also they didn't want a bar of digital IDs, right? Well, Craig Kelly from One Nation has tweeted today, posted on X, the following. After guillotining debate in the Senate, Anthony Albanese has now sneakily transferred debate on the digital ID bill to the Federation Chamber. The Federation Chamber, he says, is a smaller secondary room that is used in addition in the main House of Representatives. In other words, it's out the back. It is normally used as an overflow chamber for bills when there is a lot of legislation in the main chamber. The significance of transferring debate there is that this normally only happens to debates of less significance, and debates in Federation Chamber get little media coverage at all, as everyone is focused on what's happening in the main chamber. It's just another trick, he says, to try and get the digital ID bill passed as quietly as possible without the public being aware. So much for the transparent Anthony Albanese government, which they told us during the election campaign it would be. Debate on the digital ID bill is scheduled to start in Federation Chamber at 4 o'clock today, which is in about 1 minute from now. But it's out the back. Tell you what, they just don't want us to see all of what they're trying to force on the Australian public. And this is what they're doing. The digital ID bill is being forced on the Australian public, so much so that the debate's being held out the back. What a disgrace. Let's go to some news. I'll be back after the news. Plenty more to come. Don't go away. This is TNT.